from the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music. And welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Each week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news, you'll hear about corporations, government agencies, and people who are killing the planet, and about folks who have the detailed information on saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, and email. So please get a pencil or a pen and some recycled paper to write down the information, because this isn't couch potato radio, it's activist radio. And I'm asking you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, and making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods, up in a tripod or a tree sit, or locked down in that dragon at the road blockade. If you do have information, news, comments, or announcements for Earth First Radio, please keep that pencil and paper handy and listen for the contact information later on in the show. And let's start off with announcements. Attention, forest activists. As you may know, the Forest Service has issued a notice for public comment on the roadless area rule. Yeah, well, we believe the public has already spoken on this matter when the agency held 600 meetings and recorded 1.6 million comments on that issue. We nonetheless must make our voices heard again. It's critical that we flood the Forest Service with comments in support of protecting roadless areas. Your comments must be received by September 10th. Here is the address: USDA Forest Service, CAT, Attention Roadless ANPR, P.O. Box 221090, Salt Lake City, Utah, 84122. Once again, that address: USDA Forest Service, CAT, Attention Roadless Area ANPR, P.O. Box 221090, Salt Lake City, Utah, 84122. If you'd like to get some more information before you write your letter, and if you want to see a sample letter, go to www.americanlands.org. That's www.americanlands.org, and they've got all the information there. Coming up is Earth Vision 2001, the International Environmental Video Competition and Festival, and your entry deadline is August 31st, so you better get your video sent now. Send it to Community Television of Santa Cruz County, 816 Pacific Avenue, Santa Cruz, California, 95060. That's Earth Vision 2001, care of Community Television of Santa Cruz County, 816 Pacific Avenue, Santa Cruz, California, 95060. You do have to fill out an application form and send in $35. If you want more information about getting that form, call 831-425-8848, extension 316. That number again, 831-425-8848, extension 317. Or you can go to www.communitytv.org, and they have all the information there. That's www.communitytv.org for information about Earth Vision 2001, the International Environmental Video Competition and Festival. And Uncle Dennis is a judge. Let's move to activist news here. Illegal fishing boats caught off of Costa Rica's Cocos Island. A conservationist patrol ship seized a trawler and seven support boats illegally fishing within Costa Rica's Cocos Island National Park. Captain Paul Watson, founding president of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, was at the helm of Ocean Warrior when he apprehended the boats fishing within 8 miles of Cocos Island. Fishing within 14 miles of the uninhabited island is prohibited. Rangers from Cocos Island National Park were aboard the Ocean Warrior and joined in the capture of the mothership San Jose out of Manta, Ecuador, and seven of its tenders, small boats that were supplying the main vessel. The boats are targeting sharks using long lines, a fishing method known for hooking and drowning turtles, rays, seabirds, as well as their target catch. Shark fins can sell for more than $30 a pound at the dock in Asian markets. As of late in that afternoon, 50 kilometers, about 30 miles, of illegal long lines had been hauled up and confiscated from the boats. Quote, the National Park asked us to help because their boats are too small to go up against the poachers' main ship, said Watson. They were caught in the act. As we boarded the last boat, the fishermen were throwing hammerhead sharks overboard. Cocos Island National Park, located 550 kilometers or about 340 miles off the Pacific coast of Costa Rica, is the world's second largest uninhabited island. In 1997, the park was inscribed on the World Heritage List by the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, UNESCO. The underwater world of the national park has become famous due to the attraction it has for divers, who rate it as one of the best places in the world to view large deep ocean species such as sharks, rays, tunas, and dolphin, sea turtles, and more than 200 other fish species. Sharks are exceptionally abundant in Cocos Island waters. Hammerheads, which can reach 4 meters, about 12 feet in length, form schools of 50 or more. Friends of Cocos Island Foundation, a nonprofit Costa Rican conservation group, has identified longline fishing as the primary threat to marine wildlife of the island. If the justice system imposed jail terms in just a few cases, that would reduce the problem, said Alvira Sancho, executive director of the foundation. Costa Rican law provides for jail sentences of up to 15 years for poaching. And Santa Lucia death threat against whale activists reported to the FBI. An email stating, "You are all dead men," was sent to the Malibu, California offices of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society from Castries, Santa Lucia in the West Indies on July 25th. The volunteer crew of the Society's flagship Ocean Warrior was subjected to several days of police intimidation after the crew filmed and photographed a pilot whale being killed by a Santa Lucia fisherman and taken into Castries Harbor on July 19th, following government denials that any whaling was taking place. After the story was widely reported in the local media, the Santa Lucia Coast Guard, citing harassment, ordered Sea Shepherd's flagship expelled from Santa Lucia's waters on the same day the death threat was sent to the organization's headquarters. The email, with a return address listed as deathtoseashepherd@hotmail.com, has been turned over to the duty agent at the FBI office in Westwood, California. I wasn't sure who to report it to, but the agent told me the FBI was concerned with any threats against U.S. citizens on U.S. soil or anywhere else, said Sea Shepherd financial manager Angela Navarro. He told us to be careful when unexpected packages arrive and to let them know if we received any such packages. If you'd like more information about the Sea Shepherd Society or what they're doing against whales in Santa Lucia or against hammerhead shark fishermen off Cocos Island, contact the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, 22774 Pacific Coast Highway, Malibu, California, 90265. They don't want any packages. That address again, the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, 22774 Pacific Coast Highway, Malibu, California, 90265. They will take donations, though. Phone them at 310-456-1141. That's 310-456-1141. Or visit their webpage at www.seashepherd.org. And also in Southern California, we read in a story by Renee Luna for the LA Times, the Spirit of the Sage Council opposes approval of a plan for 632 homes on the northern border of Rancho Cucamonga. A Pasadena-based environmental group is suing the city of Rancho Cucamonga, California, and a developer hoping to overturn the city's unanimous approval of a 250-acre housing development. The Spirit of the Sage Council filed the lawsuit in West Valley Superior Court last week. The suit claims the city approved a 632-home development called the Rancho Etawanda Estates last month without an adequate environmental review. The developer, A&J Resources of Alhambra, California, and city officials stand by their decision, though. This is one of the most imperiled habitats in the world. If they want to build 632 homes in the middle of the rainforest, people would say, well, no. But because it's sage, people don't know that it's as endangered as it is, said Leona Klipstein, co-founder of the Spirit of the Sage Environmental Group. The environmental group in the past has forced developers to make larger concessions for destroying federally protected habitat in the Inland Empire, which is home to several protected species, including the small blue-gray songbird called a California coastal gnatcatcher. A&J Resources plans to acquire and preserve 86 acres nearby to compensate for destroying the sagebrush on which the gnatcatcher depends at the 250-acre Rancho Etawanda Estates development. In the suit challenging Rancho Etiwanda Estates, the group contends the developer should have set aside more than 86 acres. The estates project will add 632 homes in a gated residential community with equestrian stables and trails. The land is at the city's north border, north of 25th Street, between Day Creek Channel and East Avenue. The city plans to annex the area. Only the Spirit of the Sage group seems to object to the project plan, said Rancho Etiwanda Estates project manager Ben Anderson. It's really just Spirit of the Sage and their passion for the area, Anderson said. They seem to be unwilling, unsatisfied, or unhappy with our proposed one-to-one mitigation that the San Bernardino County and the city seem to be comfortable with. And frankly, Uncle Dennis doesn't understand how 86 acres compensates for a 250-acre housing development, but maybe it does. I don't think so, though. Lipstein said for each acre destroyed, 5 acres should be preserved. That sounds more like it. The city is also wrong to approve a project that's not within its borders, Lipstein said. City lawyer Jim Markman said that's completely and unequivocally false, since the land is in the city's sphere of influence. The state gives cities the authority to have some input on projects that could affect those cities. Markman characterized the suit as an attempt by the environmental group to stall the project and force the developer to buy more property elsewhere to be preserved, and that's right. Anderson and Klipstein said the lawsuit could slow down the project, but Klipstein said the suit is not frivolous. The validity is certainly there. We've proved it before in cases we've won, she said. Mayor Bill Alexander said the city adequately reviewed the project before approving it July 18th. The mayor added he hopes the Spirit of the Sage's concerns can be resolved outside of court. Because he'll probably lose if he goes to court. We feel like we have addressed the environmental issues, but that does not mean there is not room to continue to talk, he said. And I guess his lawyer will get to talk to the Spirit of the Sage Council. And here's an action alert. Help is urgently needed in the Slocan Valley of British Columbia. Slocan Forest Products is hacking logging roads into the last remaining watersheds and opening up a major wildlife corridor to industrial logging. Local residents are putting themselves in front of the machines and chainsaws to prevent the continued road building. Last year, blockades were successfully set up on Truzo Creek Road in Perry Siding and slowed Slocan Forest Products down enough that they were unable to log the 15,000 cubic meters of trees as planned over the winter. This new road is at the north end of Perry Siding and will, if built, join up with the partially built Truzo Road at the south end. This will open the entire ridge up to industrial logging, resulting in serious damage to the watersheds and major loss of wildlife corridor habitat and winter grazing lands. We're on the road now from 5 a.m. to 5 p.m., and we need help. Check in at the office at the Spicer Center in Winlaw, British Columbia. That's the Spicer Center in Winlaw, British Columbia. It's in the heart of the Slocan Valley. For more information on the Peace Camp, protest sites, etc. If you'd like to find a map to the Friends of the Ilaho Peace Camp, go to http://ilaho.tao.ca/ilaho map. That's ilahomap.gif. Friends of the Ilaho meetings are every Tuesday at 7 p.m. at 303 West Hastings, number 301 in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Once again, Friends of the Ilaho meetings are every Tuesday at 7 p.m. at 303 West Hastings, number 301 in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. If you can want to give them a call, the phone number is 604-255-3145. That's 604-255-4145. If you live in the Portland area, there's a chance that you can take one of the BARC hikes. The next hike is on September 9th. Give a call to 503-331-0374 to find out where they're going and where they're meeting. That's the BARC hike, September 9th, and leaving from somewhere in Portland, Oregon. The number again, 503-331-0374, or you could go to bark-out.org. That's www.bark-out.org. Get on one of those BARC hikes. They do it the second Sunday of every month, and they go out into areas that are about to be either sold or have already been sold and are about to be logged near the Portland area. Moving to animal news. A tiny meadow could send cattle ranchers out to pasture in this story by Mike Tobin. From Oklahoma City, an endangered 2-inch minnow called the Arkansas River Shiner could drive farmers off their land because the federal government is making efforts to preserve the fish's habitats. The U.S. Department of Fish and Wildlife has begun designating 1,100 miles of riverbank in four states as critical habitats to protect the threatened shiner. Some say the minnow isn't even a significant link in the food chain, and fishermen don't like to use it as bait. Its value is not necessarily economic, said Jerry Brabander, an Oklahoma ecological field supervisor for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The value is that it's telling us where there is something wrong in the river system. Cattle rancher Eldon Ridenour worries that his farm along the Canadian River in Oklahoma will be among the properties facing restrictions because of the designation. I do not have much control over what the government does, which is very scary, he said. The irony of the situation is that U.S. Fish and Wildlife don't even want to establish the lands and riverbeds as critical habitat. The department was forced to make the designation because of a lawsuit filed by the environmental group called the Center for Biological Diversity. The shiner is like a canary in a gold mine, said Peter Galvin, a conservation biologist with the center. As the fish declines, we see the decline of the overall river system, which is we humans ultimately depend on. As the habitat designation was made to include river banks, the shiner calls homes that cut across swaths of land where the Beaver, Cimarron, Canadian, and Arkansas rivers wind through four different states. Farmers fear that those little minnows will force their cows to roam other pastures, though Fish and Wildlife officials say they're not going to start telling ranchers they can't graze cattle on the river banks or tell farmers they can't fertilize, but the Oklahoma Farmers Union, for one, doesn't trust the organizations involved in the lawsuit over the designation. Basically, a lot of those groups just want to get cattle off the land, said Union Vice President Terry Dietrich. And the Snowy Plover Recovery Plan is now available for review. Strategies for recovering the Pacific Coast population of the western snowy plover are the subject of a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service draft recovery plan now available for public review. The Pacific Coast population, which includes 2,000 of the small shorebirds, was listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act in 1993. Plovers nest on coastal sand spits, dune-backed beaches, gravel bars, beach strands with little or no vegetation, open areas around estuaries, and on beaches at river mouths and gravelly bars from early March to the third week in July. Western snowy plovers are site-faithful nesters, returning to successful nesting sites year after year. The Pacific Coast population of the western snowy plover has been threatened by human disturbance, loss of nesting habitat to development, encroachment of European beech grass on the nesting grounds, and at some sites, predation by crows, ravens, foxes, and domestic cats and dogs. Natural factors such as inclement weather have also affected the quality and quantity of snow plover habitat. The draft recovery plan discusses the status, current management, recovery objectives and criteria, and specific actions needed to remove the western snowy plover from the list of endangered and threatened species. The plan proposes establishing working groups to assist in the development and implementation of management plans for each of the six recovery units. Other recommended actions necessary for the recovery of the western snowy plover include monitoring and managing breeding habitat, and wintering and migration areas in a systematic way to maximize survival and productivity, developing mechanisms for long-term management and protection of plovers and their habitat, undertaking scientific investigations to facilitate recovery efforts, and establishing an international conservation program with the Mexican government to protect western snowy plovers and their habitats in Mexico. If recovery measures succeed, the western snowy plover could be removed from the endangered species list as early as 2025, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says. Agency estimates that recovering the western snowy plover will cost at least $28.5 million. If you'd like to view the recovery plan, you can find a draft at www.r1.fws.gov. That's www.r1.fws.gov. And if you'd like to make comments, they can be submitted until December 12th to the Field Supervisor, Sacramento Fish and Wildlife Office, 2800 Cottage Way, W2605, Sacramento, California, 95825. That address again for comments, Field Supervisor, Sacramento Fish and Wildlife Office, 2800 Cottage Way, W2605, Sacramento, California, 98525. If you'd like to send email, their email address is fw1wsprp. Once again, that's fw1wsprp@fws.gov. And they will take comments on the Snowy Plover Draft Recovery Plan until December 12th. And camping has been barred to protect California desert tortoises. The Bureau of Land Management has issued a proposed order to temporarily ban camping on about 25,600 acres of public land east of the Imperial Sand Dunes to protect desert tortoise habitat. The area would not be closed to vehicles traveling on existing routes. The BLM is implementing the closures as part of a settlement agreement reached in a lawsuit filed by the Center for Biological Diversity, the Sierra Club, and the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. Regarding the agency's failure to protect the endangered desert tortoise and other rare California desert species as required under the Endangered Species Act. The proposed closure areas involve public lands east of the town of Glamis. That's Glamis, G-L-A-M-I-S. Private lands in this area would not be affected by the closure. As specified in the settlement, the temporary closure would remain in effect until the BLM consults with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and signs a record of decision for the Northern and Eastern Colorado Desert Coordinated Management Plan, scheduled to be completed in September of next year. An environmental assessment of the proposed camping closure will be available for public comment and review through September 7th at www.ca.blm.gov/cdd/lawsuit.html. Once again, that email address, www.ca.blm.gov/cdd/lawsuit.html. If you'd like to make comments on the proposed camping closure, you can send them to BLM El Centro Field Office, 1661 East 4th Street, El Centro, California, 92243. Once again, that address for comments on the camping closure east of the Imperial Sand Dunes. Send it to BLM, El Centro Field Office, 1661 East 4th Street, El Centro, California, 92243. All right. There's a war on wolves in Idaho. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is warning the public to beware of the deadly poison compound 1080 in the backcountry of central Idaho. The poison, one of the world's deadliest substances, was spread by some unknown people determined to eradicate endangered gray wolves from the wilderness. On the other side of the wolf battle, volunteers from across the country have traveled to central Idaho to protect gray wolves in the Sawtooth Mountains. The wolf guardians, organized and equipped by the conservation group Defenders of Wildlife, are camping near herds of sheep in the backcountry. If wolves prey on sheep, they can be legally trapped and killed or gunned down from helicopters by federal animal control officers. The volunteers shout, sing, and bang pots and pans to drive the wolves away. An electronic device activated by signals from radio collars on the wolves makes noise and flashes strobe lights across meadows where sheep are gathered for protection. Blasting over loudspeakers are the sounds of gangland gunfire, horses running, shotguns blasting, glass breaking, dogs barking, and horns honking. The wolves apparently flee for their lives when they hear this. Defenders of Wildlife say wolves are flourishing in central Idaho 6 years after 35 of them were relocated there from Canada. At last official count, 191 were roaming the mountains. But with their rising numbers, wolves are confronting new threats. Political opposition in Boise is strong. This year, the Idaho legislature adopted a resolution calling for the removal of all wolves from Idaho by whatever means necessary. At least 4 wolves have been killed by the banned poison compound 1080, for which there is no antidote. The Environmental Protection Agency has warned that it can also kill hikers or family dogs. Defenders of Wildlife and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has posted a $20,000 reward leading to information on the arrest and conviction of those responsible for spreading the poison. Carter Niemeyer, who coordinates the Idaho Wolf Recovery Program for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, credits the wolf guardians with helping ease some of the traditional hatred of wolves and other predators in Idaho. Defenders of Wildlife also compensates ranchers at market value for the loss of livestock to wolves. I think this situation demonstrates cooperation between the New West and the Old West, Niemeyer says. The owner of the sheep has put some trust in the volunteers and given them latitude to help protect his sheep. The volunteers support wolf recovery and are giving their time and energy for a worthwhile cause. The solution may be labor-intensive, but let's try something new. Engaging in cooperation is better than engaging in conflict. And I'd like to add that Defenders of Wildlife pays the ranchers the market value for the loss of any livestock to wolves. Just just wanted to repeat that one. And Sweden must stop hunting lynx outside of its reindeer farming areas. Sweden should not allow the hunting of lynx outside the reindeer farming areas, and the country risks facing the European court. The European Commission has reportedly given the Swedish government a deadline at the end of September, but the Minister of the Environment, Kjell Larsson, has apparently not want to reduce hunting. The Swedish lynx population is the largest in Europe, and it is also very viable, the minister has said. There are an estimated 14 to 1,800 animals in Sweden, and there may be as many as 2,000. The commission does not approve of the Swedish reasons for continuing the hunting, even though the lynx population grows fast in the middle parts of the country, reported Dagens Nyheter, the Swedish newspaper. According to the commission, Sweden does not do enough to stop illegal hunting of lynx. And we'd like to thank M2 Communications Limited for that story. And now it's time for us to take a little musical break here. We're going to check out this song called I Want to Log Your Land.
Oh yeah, I'll tell you something, I think you'll understand. 'Cause you don't have an option, I want to log your land. Clear cut's grand, and please say to me, make this infertile sand. I'm gonna log your land. Please let me log your land. 'Cause when I clear cut, I feel happy inside. So all you locked down activists, just step aside, step aside, step aside. They tell me to be sustainable. What about supply and demand? And anyway, it'll grow back. So let me log your land.
First Radio will be right back, so stay tuned.